I expected.
Welcome back to another episode of the Reinvent Health Podcast. Today, we're diving into a truly exciting topic that's been transforming the way we think about health and wellness. I'm thrilled to be joined by someone at the forefront of the personalized wellness revolution, Daniel Mayersfeld, the founder and CEO of D-Analysis Biotechnology. For over two decades, D-Analysis has been leading the charge in personalized medicine, offering cutting-edge genetic testing that helps individuals optimize their health, fitness, and nutrition based on their unique blueprint. In today's conversation, we'll explore the evolution of DNA testing, how it's shaping the future of healthcare, and what we can expect in the next few years. If you've ever wondered how your DNA can unlock the secrets to living your healthiest life, you're in for a treat. Danny, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Nikki. Thanks so much for having me on.
Such a pleasure. So can you share with us the story of how D-Analysis was founded and what inspired you to start this journey?
With pleasure. It was back in 2007. I finished a PhD in molecular biology at Wits, and I did 2 years of postdoc, part of which was to finish off some research for my PhD, but the other part was to work out what I was actually going to do with a PhD in molecular biology in South Africa. So it was part of the reason for extending the study. And during the course of my studies, I became aware, as anyone would at the time, of a lot of excitement in the early 2000s around the launch of the first draft of the human genome sequence. But then also the speed at which certain companies were sort of jumping onto this bandwagon to try and offer genetic tests to the consumer. And being within the academic environment and being precious about evidence and research and sticking to the literature, I looked at what some of these companies were doing, and I really felt that the approach was completely wrong. Because first of all, there was very little selectivity or discretion as to which markers were being included in their tests, as well as whether there was any value or evidence to justify the inclusion of those genetic markers. And the other area where I felt they were making a mistake is by bypassing the clinician and offering these direct to consumer as though this was simply a gimmicky tool that consumers on their own would be able to understand.
Yeah.
And the reality is that genetics is complicated. And it's not about how many genes you're looking at in a panel. It's about what is the evidence that justifies how you select those genes, and what can a clinician use to really manage and improve the health outcomes of their patient. So I was pretty adamant at the time that there's no reason why, you know, doctors overseas or consumers overseas should have access to tools that weren't available in South Africa. We have the technologies here, we have the people here. It was simply about bringing these so-called first world technologies to a South African healthcare market. So that was one of the sort of the driving forces to set up D-Analysis. And well done, by the way, on the pronunciation. Most people get that wrong. and the other motivating factor, I'd say, was that from within the academic setting, I became aware of this research gap that exists. So there'll be all this knowledge that sits within an academic environment, but it just never translates or filters down to the proverbial man in the street who can actually derive some benefit from it.
Exactly.
So there was so much information that we had on so many markers, how they influence health outcomes, how they can be influenced by external and environmental factors, that simply wasn't being utilized. It was sitting within the academic space and in a journal somewhere, and that's just the extent of it. So the idea of closing that gap and bringing these, you know, this complicated, novel biochemistry to the healthcare practitioners and via the healthcare practitioners to their patients, that was one of the other motivating factors. So that was really the two reasons behind setting up D-Analysis.
Okay, so well, there's a lot to go into here, and yes, it's still a misconception about, you know, you go get a DNA test done and you're going to get this report and you're going to know. Most people will come to me with this phone book size document in their hands and go, I don't know what to do with this. I'm like, yeah, of course you don't know what to do with this, because it's so complex. So let's just go back to, if we think, I mean, D-Analysis was the first in South Africa, and there's other companies that have offered these protocols and tools and testing, and they've come and gone. What makes Dianalysis different, and how have you evolved over the years? What have you learned as you've sort of evolved and stayed so steadfast in the healthcare industry?
Well, what we've done is we've remained steadfast to our founding principles, which is kind of what I was alluding to in that initial monologue of mine, which is when I set up the company, I made the decision that it would only ever be a practitioner-driven product. So we don't sell direct to consumer. We make the test available on our website, yes, but then we allocate those consumer sales to one of our trained accredited practitioner network. And the practitioners who want to work with us need to do training. So we've got a training course because the reality is that within the practitioner's academic background, very little genetics or nutrigenetics would ever have been covered. And very little still is covered within the academic curricula becoming a dietitian or a doctor. And so we provide that training. We put a lot of emphasis in the education and support of healthcare practitioners. And we really want to ensure that the practitioner is able to provide value to the patient over and above what they can simply read in the words of the report. And the other principle is that, we've always felt that genetics is one piece of the puzzle. It's not everything, it doesn't stand alone. And ideally, a practitioner will do a genetic test for a specific reason, for a specific patient, to understand more about a specific pathway or symptom that that patient has. And so it's about ensuring the ethical, the appropriate use of a test within the clinical space. And the other thing I think that differentiates us in some cases is we don't sell products. Our view is we're a genetic testing company. We're not interested in selling a DNA test only as an excuse to then sell a supplement on the back of it.
Like that.
So for us, it's about, again, remaining true to who we are, to what we do, and to ensuring that we aren't conflicted in the sense of actually having a supplement business that we're trying to promote at the same time.
Yeah, I think, staying true to your values and staying true to who you are and what really originally drove you to do what you did in the first place is what gives a company, no matter what happens in the market, you will always just remain a contender. And if you start diluting too much, and I've seen it in my business as well, when you start diluting what you do too much, you forget who you are, and it becomes it's just overwhelming, and you lose yourself.
And I think it becomes about credibility. We've stayed true to constant message for 17 years now. And so we've developed a certain credibility within the market. I don't mind having competitors in the market. It elevates the whole industry. More and more people talk about it and talk about the value of nutrigenetic tests, the better, because ultimately we're all trying to create an awareness of a very powerful tool that people can use to improve their health outcomes. And so having competitors is not a bad thing. And there are one or two people in the market who have a good product and they've got good people behind them and good science. And if doctors choose to work with that report, I'm only too happy. And then we've got some that, don't necessarily fit that bill. So, I want the consumer to be educated, to know what to look for in a genetic testing company, why they would do it. Because if you do a bad test, it taints the entire
Absolutely.
industry. It gives nutrigenetics as a whole a bad name. And that's what we're trying to prevent.
So for our audience, and those, especially our audience who are not really familiar with genetic testing, what is DNA testing? What, when you go and have a DNA test, what can you expect? Why would you do this in the first place?
So going back to the basics in terms of why would you do a genetic test? And maybe the first thing to explain is the term genetic test itself can have so many different meanings. And if we go back to the early days of genetics, two parents would get a genetic test done to understand whether they had risk of their baby having some chromosomal abnormality, for example. Then you get genetic tests for criminal forensic applications, for paternity testing. So it's important to understand the nature of the genetic test that we offer. And it's important to point out that we don't give you scary information. What we're doing is we're looking at genetic markers that by themselves will not be enough to cause disease. But put in the wrong environment, exposed to toxins, to pollutants, to environmental factors, to lifestyle factors, they become significant risk factors to increase the risk of chronic disease. Yeah. But importantly, the way we've chosen the markers that we look at, these genetic markers, and literally when I say markers, these are elements of your DNA where it's single letter changes in your DNA code that differ from one person to the next. The way we've chosen these genetic markers and how we go about the selection process for them is there has to be significant research published in peer-reviewed papers showing an association between that change in the genetic code and the expression of an enzyme or the functioning of an enzyme within a pathway.
Right.
So we know that there is a cellular pathway, a biochemical pathway that is being affected by that genetic change. But most importantly, and this is where the tests become empowering as opposed to be scary, there is an intervention available to you, be it through diet, be it through a supplement, be it through lifestyle. There is always a way to either circumvent that genetic marker or that enzyme in the pathway, or is something you can do from a lifestyle perspective to bring down that risk for chronic disease. So the whole concept of doing these types of genetic tests is to understand where your specific health risks might lie, and importantly, what you can do about it to intervene in order to reduce your risk.
Okay.
And Nikki, I think, you know, as somebody who's been in the industry a long time, as you have, you've also seen this shift towards personalized medicine, preventive medicine, the ability for consumers to be able to take more responsibility for their own health, rather than sit back the way we used to and simply rely on a healthcare system to kind of fix us when we broke it. You know, you don't wait for your car to break down. You service it routinely in order to ensure that it doesn't break down. And that's what's happening with healthcare. Firstly, we are able to treat people at far more of an individual level because we are all unique and our genetic code is what defines our individuality. And we all have different risks for chronic disease. And sure, smoking is bad for both of us, but it might be particularly bad for you. You know, and broccoli might be particularly good for me. So I know that's one of the criticisms of genetic testing is you get told to eat more broccoli, but it's such an oversimplification and it's such an understatement to phrase it that way, because it's you're not going to learn anything in a genetic test result that you haven't heard somewhere is healthy. But it's about understanding what is right for you. So if you were to walk into a big pharmacy and you know you decide you want to stop taking supplements because now you want to be healthy, most people would walk into you know a big retail pharmacy and look at rows and rows of thousands of different products and end up taking sort of a multivitamin or something. But you know, through a genetic test, you can understand which supplement you actually need in order to target and influence the molecular pathways that are conferring your risk.
Yeah.
So that's really the way of doing a genetic test.
Yeah. I mean, I always look at genetic testing as understanding your potential. So your disease risk potential. I know they always say then, you know, the genetics might be the bullet, but the environment is what pulls the trigger, you know, to simplify it, you know, that term.
Exactly. You know, one of the first, just on that analogy, one of the first talks I gave to a group of doctors, this was 17 years ago, one of the doctors in the room was my house GP at the time. You know, he was never going to work with a test himself. He'd been in practice for donkey's years. But he said it's like giving somebody a virtual disease.
Okay.
And I just love that analogy because it's exactly what it is. You know, you might not have type 2 diabetes, but you've got elevated risk for it based on your genetics. Act now as though you haven't. And take the lifestyle measures that somebody would give you if you were in a pre-diabetic state. So it's a sort of virtual disease information that allows you to ultimately prevent the disease onset.
So let's actually go a little deeper into that, because so often I see people in my practice who say, well, they come in and they go, my whole family's got diabetes. It's genetic. There's nothing I can do. Oh, we love that. And I'm just resigned to the fact that I'm going to be sick. And actually, no. Very often your whole family's got diabetes because of the choices they've made. Yes, you've got this genetic potential, and people without a genetic potential for diabetes can still get diabetes. It's not necessarily a genetic, you know, life sentence. But
it's not destiny.
It's exactly that. And you can choose your destiny, which is so powerful. And that's, you know, we'll talk about personalized medicine later and our health destiny, which is my favorite subject. But I'd really like people to understand, and perhaps you can just share your experience and your point of view, that even though you might have a family history of cancer or diabetes, it's still up to you what choices you make right now going forward that will determine whether or not you get the disease. What are your thoughts around that? And I know you get this comment all the time as much as I do.
It's absolutely the fact is your genes are not your destiny. I think the one big thing that came out of the Human Genome Project is it was previously thought that your genes were your destiny, and that this is the card that you'd been dealt, and you simply had to sort of suffer the consequences, if you like. But what we really learned from the human genome is the massive interplay that exists between genes and environment. And that's not just during the course of your life, as you know, but that's from before you're born. That's the environment within the womb as you're a developing fetus, and in fact, you could go back another generation. It's actually, there's this transgenerational healthcare aspect that comes into it, where the experiences of my grandparents can affect some of my risks for health today, which is fascinating. But the reality is that if you take type 2 diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease, and cancers, the vast, vast, vast majority of those diseases are lifestyle related, and they're not directly linked to one or two high penetrance genetic markers. Type 1 diabetes being an exception, so we're talking about type 2 diabetes. And then you get the cases of obesity where it's very much a genetic obesity, and it's far less lifestyle related. But those are the minority. Those are in the single digits in terms of percentage of incidence in the population. So whatever it might be, 80, 90% of your chronic diseases are imminently preventable. And that's why they're called chronic diseases of lifestyle. Because the burden of responsibility really sits with us as to whether we get those diseases or not.
No, I love that. I love it.
You've got family histories. It's the fact that there's a family history should be all the more motivation to adopt the right lifestyle habit, and shouldn't be seen as a destiny. So if you had a parent that suffered from lung cancer and you smoke, then you've got only yourself to blame.
Well, exactly. And you can't really blame your genes for that. It's the environment and the action you're taking. So what are your thoughts? And I'm not going to hold you to this, but this is something that really is always a question in my mind. For example, if you know what your genetic predisposition is to, say, let's call it type 2 diabetes, and you take action and you follow a healthy lifestyle and you almost like make sure that you do everything in your power to not let that happen. Can you influence your genome for further, your great grandchildren? Can you turn off that genetic potential? Or is it always going to be a potential?
It's an interesting question. And I think I think my gut instinct is, you're not going to change the code. That is going to get passed on to the next generation, no matter what you do. But the healthier you are, the better it will be for future generations. And I'll give you an example of that. We've got a genetic test now called Grow Baby, which is specifically focused on maternal and fetal health. And what's been shown in a study that we've done with it was a study of close to 1,000 patients run through one of the American universities, that we could reduce the preterm birth rate. The average in the county was, I think, 12%. And using the genetic test followed by the appropriate lifestyle interventions for the pregnant mom, we took that down to zero. Now, preterm birth itself is associated with multiple long-term chronic disease risks for the newborn baby. By the mom intervening and having the right supplementation, the right nutritional lifestyle interventions during pregnancy, and by the way, this could be influenced as far as the second trimester. So there really is this massive influence on the next generation. I don't know if that answers your question, but absolutely, we can take more responsibility for the health of ensuing generations. Yes.
Yeah, it's hard to say whether you can eradicate that SNP altogether. I mean, no one's going to go out there and say, of course you can. Wait and see. You never know what's going to happen when people start taking this seriously.
So I think the way you eradicate it is by changing people's behavior and changing people's mindsets and changing the environment that it becomes the norm to grow up in. So if we grow up eating cereals and processed sugars and that becomes the norm for our kids, and th then we're not eliminating that environmental risk factor, which is so critical. So it's more about adopting these lifestyle habits and behaviors that we change our environment in order to protect the next generation.
I'm also curious about, we're talking about transgenerational trauma. And there are certain diseases that are very particular to certain population groups. And when you look at what these population groups have been through in the last 100 years, and you see what diseases manifest in their grandchildren, great-grandchildren, it makes you sort of wonder if we can control for that. So if we can do the work and do the therapy and do the whatever it takes to prevent that trauma, can we almost turn off the disease risk in generations to come? And it's a question, it's not even a statement, but it is something that I think if you're working with people, is something that always that does come to mind.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, I think, we talk about different types of maybe trauma is not the wrong word, but different types of influences. And we've got the influence of our genetic code. We've got the influence of our immediate environment. And then we've got the influence of, the emotional traumas that we might have experienced, or in this case, that our predecessors, parents or grandparents might have experienced. And that's where the epigenetics becomes so critical of managing that type of influence going forward. So absolutely, I think with an awareness of it, with the proper management of it is something that we can, I don't know, ultimately eradicate, but certainly put our next generation into a better position to manage with a view to eventually reducing incidents. We're going to be launching, and I'm sure Nikki, you must have come across the whole concept of the methylation sort of aging clock tests, where they look at your methylation patterns, which really represent your gene expression profiles since birth. And based on that, you can compare your actual biological age with your cellular age in order to pick up sort of your so-called rate of aging. And I'll be looking into the science on that because we're going to be launching one of those tests in the coming months. And it's really fascinating to see how your methylation patterns, they represent almost a lifetime of influences that your DNA has been exposed to. So yeah, it's fascinating in terms of the whole concept of how we can manage or regulate our own gene expression in order to ultimately reduce disease risk, slow down our rate of aging, by which I mean just maintain health as we age. So it's really a fascinating field all around.
I can't think of anyone who wouldn't want to know, how can we best slow down the clock? Because anti-aging or aging well and personalized medicine is so much on the forefront of where medicine is going. But what are the on the sort of the event horizon in the next 10 years, what do you think is going to be or are going to be the most exciting advancements in DNA testing? Where do you see it going? Where would you like to see it going?
I think where is it going? And I speak, I guess, from a perspective of my experience in South Africa is setting up the analysis back in 2008 was very early for the South African market. And I'm fortunate that we're still around now in 2025, that we've seen the extent to which the field has advanced over the last 17, 18 years. The general or the increasing acceptance of the technology amongst more your mainstream medical community. Talking to the funders, to whoever else, that even 5 years ago, we wouldn't have been having these conversations. So I really think that the whole concept of personalized medicine, genetic testing in the context of personalized medicine is becoming part of the more mainstream conversation and is more widely accepted by people who previously maybe were very, very skeptical. And that's because, you know, the science has advanced so far, and there's just so much more that we understand about our genetic code and how we can manage our gene expression and take more responsibility for our health. So I do think that that's going to continue to happen. I think if we take a test like it's not so much on the lifestyle side, but if we take pharmacogenetics, where it's these genetic markers that look specifically at how you respond to chronic medication, there are approximately 200 different medications that in the package insert recommend the use of a genetic test to help guide dosage.
Yeah, I love that.
Now, if you think of the incidence of non-responsiveness, take the average patient seeing a psychiatrist, how long it will take them to get onto the right medication to prevent the side effects, the lack of efficacy. It's a lengthy process, and that's not a criticism of any psychiatrist. It's simply the reality of how difficult it is to get a person onto that medication. It's the same with your pain medications, your analgesics. It's the same with certain cardiovascular drugs that, based on your genetics, you metabolize these drugs differently. Some people will have side effects, and some people will simply not respond. So a genetic test like that, which can give the doctor that information preemptively, and again, it's becoming really coming to the fore in South Africa now as a go-to credible science, a credible test that a lot of doctors are starting to work with. So we've seen this great progression of the field as a whole, and I think that's only going to accelerate in South Africa. Fortunately, we've got a strong presence internationally, so I do spend quite a bit of time with doctors in the Middle East, doctors in America, and South Africa is still a couple of years behind the rest of the world, but we can absolutely see where it is going in terms of how much more advanced they are there in terms of acceptance of this technology. What is also fascinating and what is also interesting to monitor is not just the science side of it, but the lab tech side of it. Obviously, the cost of analysis coming down. There's interesting work being done to be able to test at point of care, which means a patient could be in hospital without having to send a sample to a lab, test their genetics at the bedside, and almost get an immediate response as to how best to manage that patient. So on the technology side, that's really interesting to follow.
Yeah.
I saw a couple of months ago, it was announced that in the UK, the NHS is starting a pilot for 100,000 parents, where instead of the traditional heel prick test that a newborn baby would have to screen for a couple of genetic markers, they now do whole genome sequence.
Wow.
So they're going to be doing it for 100,000 babies at birth.
Wow.
And then using that to best give feedback to the parents on particular health risks and how best to intervene and manage. So that's from newborn baby status. It just shows that it's never too early to start, considering your health and how best to manage the health of your kids.
Now, that's an enormous breakthrough. And just thinking of from life expectancy and longevity and what we can do to make sure that we live, that our health span is the longest and best it can be. If we can really understand ourselves from birth, there's no reason why people can't live well and healthily beyond 100.
I think the word you used there is health span, which is very much where I sit in terms of this whole longevity field. For me, it's not about living longer or how people can live longer or should they live longer. It's not about that. For me, it's about closing the gap between your lifespan and your health span. And at the moment, globally, the statistics are quite horrendous, that people are spending the last decade of their life in a diseased state. And if we can reduce that and let people, even if they die at the same age, but they're healthy for longer, I think that's what it's important, to stay healthy for as long as possible.
I spoke to a psychiatrist, I think it was on the show, a couple of months, if not years ago, and he said, we can test everything. You do blood tests for everything and you can see what's going on with a person's sugar levels and their cholesterol levels and to an extent even their serotonin levels. But as a psychiatrist, we're working quite blind. We are talking to people and sort of getting an educated understanding of what their needs are, but we don't really know what's going on in their brain and how they're going to respond to a medication. So it's highly experimental, which is terrifying, because when you talk about anxiety and depression and how people are in the world because, of their mental state. To say that I'm giving you a medication and we'll see how it goes is nerve-wracking. So if you can do a genetic test and understand so much deeper, will this person's brain respond to this chemical positively or negatively? It's phenomenal. I really think, and from your point of view, are there mental health care practitioners, psychiatrists embracing this technology and really understanding, the power of being able to help people better through genetic testing?
Yeah, there are. There definitely are. There's quite a few psychiatrists in practice now in South Africa who will do a genetic test on a patient before they start to treat them, or because they just really want to understand. We can never tell them what to prescribe, and we can't diagnose the patient the patient's problem. So class of medication or the diagnosis still has to come from the psychiatrist, but within that class, there are often multiple medications to choose from, and that's where we can help them to refine it. So it's just about making their job that little bit easier to reduce the number of options that they might have in order to get a person onto the most suitable medication in the shortest possible space of time. Maybe one of the challenges with the test is, I think the perception about the genetic test is that it's a black and white answer. It should be saying to the doctor, yes or no, disease risk there or not there, that sort of response. Whereas with pharmacogenomics, we can say there's a likelihood that they're going to have a side effect or they might need an increased dose. But you can't necessarily say to them what that dose should be. And so there's still discretion and clinical experience that the doctor needs to use in combination with that genetic test in order to best manage their patient.
Yeah, makes
So
sense.
again, it's a rapidly advancing field, and you've got hospitals in America that pretty much won't admit a patient without having a genetic test done first. Looking at how they're going to respond to the different pain medications, how they're going to respond potentially to psychiatric medications or cardiovascular medications, certain antibiotics. There's I think we cover 160 different medications in our report that it's FDA level evidence showing the association between a particular genetic variation and responsiveness to a certain molecule.
Incredible, incredible. So somebody listening to this and sort of wanting, who never had a DNA test done, someone listening to this for the first time and their interest has piqued, where would you suggest they start?
Probably the best point is to start with the website. We've got on our website, we've got sample reports, we've got a lot of information about the reports. And importantly, we've also got a list of the accredited healthcare practitioners that work with us that they can contact. So really, there's two ways of going about actually getting the test. If their own practitioner, whether that's a psychiatrist or a dietitian, doesn't necessarily know about or work with the tests, they can access the test through us, through the website, and we will then allocate a practitioner to them, somebody who's trained with us who can talk them through the report. In the case of MedCheck, what we do is we get the name from them of their prescribing doctor, and we send the report to that doctor, but we also would reach out to them and see if they need any assistance from us in how to interpret that report if they're seeing it for the first time.
And how would you suggest that someone go? I mean, when you go on your website, there is so much to choose from. What, where, I mean, very often people say, well, where do I start? Where would you suggest they,
Yeah, I
where?
mean, we're a little bit unique in South Africa, in fact, almost globally, in the sense that we break all the different tests up into smaller reports. And the reason we do that is because we're mindful of the expertise and potentially the scope of practice of the healthcare practitioner working with the test. So if you lump everything into one basket and you've got mental health and sports performance and weight loss, and now, sort of fetal and maternal health all in one report, suddenly a lot of that report might make the practitioner uncomfortable because it's not really their skill set to intervene or to manage. So we've broken them down to smaller individual reports. The three that we have combined into a new report called DNA Core, and this is where I would suggest the starting point would be, is DNA Core essentially looks at nutrition, it looks at exercise, and it looks at weight management. And anybody looking to embark on a health journey, those are very much the key areas that they're going to be focusing on. So you'd start off with, let's say, the DNA Core test. And then you look at the other tests and you see, right, which of these would be relevant to me? So if you're pregnant, then grow a baby. If you're battling with your mental health, we've got DNA Mind. If you're battling with stress, we've got a test called DNA Resilience, which looks specifically at how you perform and how you manage stress if you work in particular stressful conditions or a stressful environment. So all these different tests, which then in terms of the pricing, once you've done DNA Core, those tests become cheaper to add on either immediately, or you can come back to us a year later and you did a DNA Core test, you now want a DNA Mind test,
right.
You can simply purchase that report.
Okay, makes sense. Okay, this is great. So where can people find you and where can they order their tests and how do they get in touch with a practitioner who can help them navigate the results and get the most out of what they are looking for?
So the web address is DNalysis, that's www.dnalysis.co.za. That's the best place. Practitioners have their contact details listed there. You can read information about the reports. And then in terms of social media, I think our Instagram is DNalysisSA. So you can also reach out to us through Instagram. We've got LinkedIn and Facebook pages as well. So
brilliant.
Either my personal LinkedIn page, which is just my name, Danny Meisfeld, otherwise the DNalysis South Africa LinkedIn page as well.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing your story today on the show. And yeah, I'm hoping anyone listening, their interest will be piqued and they'll go and find out more and take action. You know, the whole point of this show and what we all stand for in this preventative wellness industry is giving people their power back and realizing that they actually own their health and they can do something about it. It's never too late.
Absolutely. Nikki, thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it. It was great chatting.
Such a pleasure.